Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages, thank you so much for coming back for another Wim Hof Wednesday. Today we have someone very special who came in the clutch with me because I needed someone this week because someone canceled. And not only that, she's coming with a message that is super valuable, super passionate, and super powerful that we're going to need as instructors. So Teresa has been teaching yoga and meditation for 8 years. And right now is in the training to become a yoga therapist. She's going to be telling you more about that later if you're interested. She's trained in different methods and focuses on teaching both yoga and meditation as an accessible and embodied way. I got the pleasure to visit her website, which I'm going to be sharing with you here today. And without me speaking so much, I would love to pass the mic to Teresa. But before I do that, I want like everyone to unmute themselves. Only Lewis can't, but everyone please. And then get this hand, which is your right hand, and this hand, which is your left hand, and bang them together as we welcome her on the stage. Welcome to this, and thank you.
Thank you for the nice welcome, Francesco. I'm really excited to be here. I've prepared a little presentation that I'd like to share, if that's okay. I've also prepared, it's not a little, it's a big handout, but it's more like a collection of things that you can use after if you want. And I'll give you access to that right after. But at first, let me share my presentation. Oof, can you see that? It's big for me. Perfect. So my name is Teresa. I'm a Wim Hof instructor since September, like so many of you guys, I think. I think I know almost everyone who's in the room, so that's really nice. Either from Poland or from LA. And I would like to talk about meditation. And as a little intro, I think meditation can be for everybody, but I don't think that every kind of meditation is for everybody. I think there are particular methods, particular kinds that work better for someone and work less good for someone else. And I think it's with so many things in our lives that we need to try and experiment and then see what works for us. And that's where I wanna go with this. I think we all probably know that meditation is good for you or good for us. Like there's so much research out there that has been done in the last couple of decades that shows how meditation can have impacts on your body, impacts on your mind, can help with various diseases. I'm not gonna go into this. If you wanna know more, I have some sources that I can share with you if you want. That's basically the intro. And so I need a little to arrive because it's really hard to define meditation. I thought we'll turn the thing around and go through some slides that say what meditation is not, because it's a bit easier to do that from the back kind of way in. So meditation is not religion. I think that's really important to say ahead of time. Because meditation has its roots in religion, definitely in Eastern religions, but it's also not that far off from Western religions. Like if you look at, I don't know, singing in a church, it's like celebrating or repeating a mantra. So it's pretty similar. Or like if you look at the way how Muslims pray, it's like a moving meditation almost. So there are so many parallels between religion and meditation, but you can practice meditation without subscribing to a belief system of a religion. And I think that's really important to say before you dive in. Meditation is also not relaxation. I mean, it can be. And there are some methods that really focus on relaxing the body and relaxing different body parts to dive into the meditation. But meditation is not supposed to be just like lying down and falling asleep. A couple of years ago, four years ago, I was in Japan in a monastery to learn Zen meditation. And we would wake up at 4:30 a.m. to meditate for 2 hours. And yes, I fell asleep several times. but what my teachers told me and what I think is true is that if you fall asleep during meditation, it's because you don't sleep enough at night. It's because you need sleep. It's because your body or your mind is craving relaxation. And that's totally okay. But it's just not the process of meditation, and it's not the aim, the thing that we're aiming for when we meditate. Meditation is also not effortless. it is doing something. It's not just sitting there and doing nothing. It's actually using your mind to be aware or to focus on some certain things that are either happening in your body or in your mind or even outside of your body. So it should not be super hard. It should not be like focus when you try to solve a really complicated math equation, but it should also not be, oh, I'm here, I'm wherever, like my mind is going somewhere. It's something in between, and it's a bit hard to define and a bit hard to explain. It's more something that you need to experience. And that you need to experiment with. So meditation is neither super hard nor super easy. Explaining meditation practices or techniques is usually pretty simple. Like most of them are like a 1 minute explanation and then you kind of get the concept. But getting the concept is not enough. It's usually the hard part is to actually do the thing and to actually stick with the thing and to do it again or to do it for a bit of a longer time. And so, yes, it is a bit hard. There is some challenge to it, but it should not be super exhausting and it should not be painful. And something that I'll talk about later a little bit more, but that I want to mention here is that meditation can also be painful and it cannot work for some people. So if you're, for example, someone who survived trauma, the normal kind of sitting down, closing your eyes thing might not work for you. If closing your eyes is triggering to you, then we might look for a different kind of meditation that can adapt to what you need. Meditation is also not about feeling good. I mean, in the long run, it is about feeling good. It's about being a better human, feeling better in your skin, having a better experience in your life. But in the short term, it's not only about feeling good. Oftentimes when I get up from my mat, I don't feel that great because it wasn't that great of an experience because it's not supposed to be. And I would like to tell you a little story that I don't remember where I got it from, but I'm sure it's someone really wise that told it to me. So imagine there's a student and a teacher, like a monk, and the student comes to the teacher and he tells him, oh, wow, today my meditation session was so great. I feel so enlightened. I was so focused, no distractions. It was so great. And the teacher, the monk, says, well, great, keep practicing. And the next day, the same student walks up to the monk and he's like, oh God, today it was so shitty. Like I got distracted all the time. My foot fell asleep. It was not great at all. And the monk says, well, great, keep practicing. So yes, sometimes it feels great. And yes, sometimes it feels really shitty. But the key point about it is that you go back and that you're actually aware of these things, that you're aware that some days it's like this and some days it's like that. And over time, you kind of learn to live with these waves and you're not going with the waves all the way up and all the way down, but you're actually able to watch the waves rather than going with them all the time. Cool. Meditation is not a quick fix. It's really not a quick fix. It's really one of those things that you need to do over and over and over again. Maybe you are one of the lucky ones that do it twice and then they feel like, oh, great, I have results, I have progress. But usually it's not. Most people take a long time to actually feel the effects of meditation. And that's why it takes commitment. And I feel like for you guys, it's probably something that you're used to because with the Wim Hof method, yes, there might be a high right after. But you also need to do it over and over again to keep reaping the benefits of your practice. So that's the same here. And meditation is also not all you'll ever need. There are things that cannot be fixed by meditation. There are things that happen in our lives that are not our fault, that we cannot influence, that we cannot change. There are things that need medical attention or a therapist or someone to talk to. So meditation is not fixing all of these things. Yes, it's true. Meditation can improve many conditions and can help with many things, but it's not saving you from all the bad things in the world. I feel like it's kind of obvious, but it's also important to say that. And meditation is not distraction free. Thinking that distraction is the enemy of meditation is like thinking that weights are the enemy of someone who tries to gain muscle. You need distraction to actually learn how to meditate. If you would never be distracted, you wouldn't do anything. Because you need the distraction as a trigger to tell you, hey, you're distracted. you need to get back. You need to focus again, or you need to watch where your mind is going and see if that's a pattern, if you are always going in the same direction. It can teach you so much to see what those distractions are. And that's why we need the distraction. And distraction, imagine distraction like a weight when you do bicep curls. Like doing bicep curls without weights doesn't really do anything, right? So we need the distraction. Cool. That was my not definition of meditation. And I have made a little reel on Instagram about distraction in my meditation practice that I would like to share, but I think I need to share my sound first. Yes, there it is, so that you hopefully can hear what I'm saying.
This is my me time for my meditation. So in this book we recently read, there was
I got this. I'm meditating.
So we have several unanswered emails in our inbox.
Oh, a distraction. Let's get back.
For dinner, we still need to buy pasta and tomatoes and olive oil.
Not now.
When is the last time we called mom?
Why can I never focus?
Be kind.
Be kind.
So yeah, that was my humorous take on distraction. I think it shows pretty well how I often feel. Like in the beginning, it's pretty easy for me to be kind to my distractions. And I'm like, yeah, okay, this is coming. I know this, I can get back. Oh, this is coming. I know this, I can get back. But then if it comes the 15th time, I'm like, why is it always coming back? Why is it always distracting me? And that's the practice for me. So yeah, I just wanted to share because I think it's funny and it's very real. One of the things that I mentioned a little bit before is that meditation can be really difficult for people who survive trauma, for people who suffer from ADHD, depression, anxiety, and other psychiatric diagnoses. And so not every practice is for everyone, but we can actually find a practice that works for almost everyone. And I think that's really important for people like me, yoga therapists or meditation teachers, but also for people like you who work in the Wim Hof field, who work with breath work. Being trauma sensitive is something that I think can never be wrong. And so I wanted to raise this point here. So many people who suffer from things like depression or ADHD or anxiety, they already feel like they're kind of wrong or something's wrong with them. And if you teach them, this is how it's done. And if it's not working for you, it's your fault. Then you kind of make it worse. So as a teacher or as a coach, I would urge you to be a bit more open and to try to find solutions with people that actually find a practice that you can kind of make fit rather than fit the person into the practice, because that rarely works well and that rarely has long-lasting effects. So for example, for trauma survivors, you could place them back at the wall and keep their eyes open so that they feel more comfortable. Or you could, if you teach a group, you could say things like, if you want to close your eyes, or if you feel comfortable, close your eyes, but never say close your eyes, because then they kind of feel like they have to and they feel kind of wrong. And it's the same thing with physical limitations. If someone can't sit on the floor, they can always sit on a chair. Like you don't have to be in one position to meditate. You can be, if you can't sit, you can lie down. It doesn't matter. You can meditate standing up. Like find a way that works for you rather than forcing yourself into something that's not you. There are so many different kinds of meditations that it's sometimes a little bit hard to navigate the field. Like I feel like many people know they should meditate, but many people don't know where to actually start. And so I made some categories that I'll talk about now, but that are also on my handout so that you can have a look later. These categories are not fixed or they are not mutually exclusive, but they are kind of a trial to make it a bit more structured. There are guided meditations. I think that's the most obvious one. It's the one that you find when you look into a meditation app like Headspace or Calm or Insight Timer or whatever. People will guide you through something. That's also what comes up in yoga classes sometimes. A practice I really like is a loving kindness practice that's usually also guided because it's pretty high level and it's a bit hard to guide yourself through it because there are so many steps. So it's some of the practices are just easier if you have someone telling you what to do or what to think next. But the issue with guided meditations is that you sometimes zone out. We're so used to have noise coming at us from TVs or music or whatever, that we kind of are really good at zoning out and thinking of something else. So having a guided meditation might not be for you if you're someone that already has a lot of input all day long. It might actually be nice to try something without guidance sometime. But in the handout that I'm giving you, there is a little practice database and there are some guided things in there. So if you want to try something guided, that world is pretty big and there's a lot of stuff you can try. Another option is a moving meditation. That's everything that involves repetition. So if you do movements over and over again, that can be kind of meditative. In yoga, we sometimes do 108 sun salutations. And that's something that has a meditative touch because you do it over and over again. If you've heard of Osho's meditations, they are usually moving. There's usually some movement elements in it. Shaking or dancing can be a great way to meditate. And even horse stance, like you see on the picture, can be a way of meditation. Probably not if you do it like us here because we're having way too much fun for it to be meditative. But if you do it for yourself and if you focus on your movements and if you feel your body, that can be some kind of meditative effect. There are awareness meditations. That's everything that's within you. If you're aware of yourself, either your body or your mind. So you can be aware of your breath. You can be aware of your heartbeat. You can be aware of your senses, or you can be aware of your thoughts or your thought patterns. Sazen meditation is something that's also in the handout, but we might talk about it a little in a couple of minutes. We'll see. But that's counting your breaths. So that's also some kind of awareness meditation. And the last category is what I call focus meditations. And that's when you focus on something that's outside of you. And for someone who's already maybe someone who overthinks or who overanalyzes things, focusing on something that's not you can actually be super helpful. So looking at waves like here on the ocean, or looking at a candle flicker and like watching how the candle moves, that's a focus meditation. You can also focus on a mantra, on repeating a sentence or an affirmation over and over again, or you can focus on your partner. And in the practice database, there are a couple of fun partner meditation practices that you can try if you have someone to try them with. But yeah, again, as I just said, for me, when I was really depressed and when I had issues with getting out of my like spiral of depressive thoughts, focusing on something outside of me was key. So I think this can be a really good entrance point for people who have a hard time focusing or who have a hard time with spiraling thoughts. So yeah, those are the four categories. And now I'm actually done with my presentation. This is, I think, an important thing. One must champion oneself and say, I'm ready for this. And because I think that's the hard part, right? Like, you know, meditation is there, but what do you actually do with it? And so I want to take a look with you and share some actual applicable steps. I'll stop the share and share another page. Give me a second. I'll share the link first. And then we can talk about this. This is the link. Maybe someone can try clicking on it and see if it actually works the way I want it to work. And this is what the link should lead to. Does it look something like that? Yeah, perfect. So I've taught a meditation course that was in an online format, and I used some of the stuff here to share with you that you can use for yourself. There's some explanation on the top. And then there are some videos where I explain stuff that I've already explained today, but also other things. And you can just go through that. There's a quick start guide that tells you stuff about meditation and something about habit change that you might already know or not. Feel free to explore and to look at the things and to play with it. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to chat about something. I think it can be really valuable, but it's, yeah, for everyone who wants to do something with it. There's also a practice database here on the top that you can click on. And then there are some little practices that you can use from there. For example, here is a video on some partner practices that you could do if you wanted to. Yeah, but before I want to open for questions, I think it would be nice to do like a 2-minute practice together, if that's okay with everyone. You don't need anything. You can stand, you can sit, you can lie down, whatever. You can close your eyes, but you don't have to. Just take a moment to feel your body, to feel your skin, maybe the temperature on your skin, to feel your muscles. Maybe there are some body parts that ask for more attention than others. And if a body part asks for attention, you don't need to get into the narrative of why it feels that way. You can just see that it's there, notice that it's telling you something. And then see if you can feel your bones, your joints, and everything that's around your joints. See if something asks for attention there. And then allow yourself to see what's going on in your mind. Is it chaotic? Are there many thoughts coming and going? Is it busy? Or is it quiet and tired? And again, you don't need to follow anything. You can just take a quick look on what's there, like an inventory of what's coming. And then let's work our way further in. See if you can feel your heartbeat. And if you can't feel it, you can visualize it. You can just imagine how your heart is beating because it is. And last but not least, focus on your breath. You don't need to change anything. You can just accept it the way it's just moving. Maybe see where you can feel your breath the most. Maybe it's in your belly, maybe it's in your chest, maybe it's on the tip of your nose or on your upper lip. Let's take 3 deep breaths together. Wherever you are, exhale all your air out first. And then start inhaling through your nose. And exhale through your mouth. Inhale all the way, fill up your belly and your chest up to your collarbone. And then let it all go again. And once more, take the deepest inhale of your day, maybe a little bit more than before. Maybe even hold it in for a second or two. And when you're ready, let it go. Thank you for your attention. This was just a really, really short thing that you can try for. Like, I like to do it when I sit down at my desk before I start working, just to see where I am, see where my body is, see where my mind is. And it is meditation, even if it's just a minute, it is meditation. So you don't need to make it super complicated and commit to meditating for 20 minutes a day in the morning and at night. It can be less and it can still be good. So yeah, if you have any questions or comments, I just read something in the chat.
Hey everybody, I'm relaxed and that was only just 2 minutes. Let me get back to the hosting role. So if everyone can please help me in pressing that unmute button, because we have a little thing we have to do with our right hand and our left hand. Teresa, I want to really, really thank you from the bottom of my heart. And I know everyone else in here. So please, everyone, just give her a round of applause. She deserves that. That was wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much. And yeah, I have a few questions and I'm still chill. I really, I went on the journey with you and within myself. So I'm going to wake up. The questions that I have, I'd like to hold to the end, or if anyone, yeah, but I want to open this up for everyone else and how they can bring this to the table for their Wim Hof future or their Wim Hof present. So the table is open for questions for Teresa. Wonderful presentation. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Let me go first. It's not a question. It's a comment. I've said this several times. Teresa, you rock. You are awesome. Your presentations are always so together. You bring so much love and so much wonderful energy as you're delivering your information. You just are great. Yeah. And we are all better off in this world because Teresa is in it.
I concur, doctor. I concur. That really, really rocked. And like I said, it really rocked. And that way to end it was really nice too.
If I ever had a fan club, Nick would be the leader, I think.
Cool.
Yes.
But please, anyone with a question that we can, because we have her live and living digital color right now, so we can get to this master meditator therapist to be in the next few weeks. We can really get into those questions. So please get those juicy questions for anyone listening out there. Our future instructors here and the future instructors are going to be graduating this week and in March. Please get those questions out so we can help them as well. Well, I have some questions. If no one's not going to jump in. Chris, it looks like you're going to jump in.
Yeah, I have a question as well. I mean, I commented in the comments kind of when you were talking about meditation in general. Sorry, I'm sitting near my...
Whoa.
My dad here in a minute.
Dad, you're interrupting my podcast.
The question is just, do you find that meditation is separate from breath work?
Great question.
That's something that I've been meditating since 2007 or 2006 and only started doing breath work about 4 years ago. But there was a year in there where I was like, oh yeah, I can just do breath work. I don't have to do meditation. And then about 6 months, 7 months into that, I was just like, wait, there's something missing and I don't know what it is right now. So that's just kind of my thought. And I was curious what your thoughts were on that as well.
Great question.
I do agree. I think it's something different and I think both have their place. But for example, if I do Wim Hof breathing, I love the time after where I can just hang out and enjoy. But that's not meditation because that's too effortless. I'm not actually trying to focus or I'm not actually being aware. I'm just being there in my zen, whatever, balanced kind of self. But it's not actual practice. I agree. It's different. And I think it's one of those things where we have the toolbox and we need to know which tool we need to accomplish what. And I have had times in my life where I meditated every day for a year. Yeah. And then I have times where I don't meditate for a week because I don't know, there just wasn't the right mindset or the right time or the right space. And I think we need to be okay with that too and just know when to use which tool. Yeah. Are you meditating every day, Chris?
I do meditate and I practice breath work every day. One of the big things for me is just finding ways to, practice breath work and meditation and to weave them together. So instead of considering, meditation or breath work to be a replacement for one or the other, it's how do I do 4 or 5 rounds of Wim Hof and then use that space where my mind is very clear at the end of that in order to do a compassion meditation, a gratitude meditation, a forgiveness meditation, whatever that is, or to use that space to visualize, the future that you're living into and creating to then use that. Because it's a very powerful space. And it takes a lot of effort to do and to get into that mindset. So you might as well use it then for your meditation afterwards, or meditate first, then go into the Wim Hof. You can play around and see what works for you. Awesome. And I have to go open the door for my dad, so I'll be back.
Right. Thank you so much. I'm sorry.
Something to add is also when I first started meditating, I would always feel like I need to practice yoga first and then I can sit down and meditate because that's how they say it is. You need to prep your body and then you can meditate. Now I'm not that strict anymore and it's fine too. You can play with these little tools and use them like Chris says, you can do like this and you can do it the other way around. It's a bit of an experiment, I think.
Thank you. That really glad
to jump
you shared
on
that.
What you said just now, Teresa. I think practicing yoga before meditation, it just brings you the focus, the ability to be focused during the meditation. don't you think?
Yes, it totally helps to get into the body. Yeah. I also think it's just easier to sit. If you're someone who sits down cross-legged, it makes sense to stretch your hips first. Like physically, it makes sense, and mentally it makes sense too. But if I only have 20 minutes in the morning, for example, because I'm busy, I'll have to kind of make sure I get the things in that I want to get in. And if I don't practice yoga and just meditate, that's fine. Like, I think you need to be flexible with these things.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
I also wanted to share my experience regarding meditation. For me, meditation is also taking an ice bath, because it's really the moment that I just focus on myself, and even not focus, it's the moment where I'm really inside.
Yeah.
And that I reach an inner peace. So it's maybe only 3 or 4 minutes, whatever, but it feels like a short but intense meditation.
I think it's funny, because the first couple of ice baths I took, every time I went into survival. It was like, okay, I need to focus to be here. But now that I know that I can get through the ice bath, it's actually really cool to play with the attention and to be like, how are my toes feeling? How are my fingers feeling? What's my mind actually doing while I'm in the ice? Like, if you gain experience, you can gain a bit more awareness on more levels, I think. And that can be really cool too.
The first time I did an ice bath, I was like, wow, Wim is right. It's merciless. It's relentless in its attention. Like, I was like, there's no way I can think of outside thoughts. Yeah. I'm just so present in the coldness. And of course, that's not true. After 100 ice baths, now I can think about my groceries and I can think about almost anything. Like, it's so amazing, the mind's ability to have outside thoughts, no matter how present something, you know, has the capability of bringing you into presence.
Thank you guys for your comments and your words. And yeah, let's try to get some questions out there to pick your brain, because you got some years under your belt, 8 years, and right now you're about to be a yoga therapist. So if you don't mind, I would love to ask you a question that I hope can help our instructors to be, and the instructors have been here for a while already, and our veterans that watch or listen to this podcast. When it comes to meditation, you know, there's guidance in that, those cues and those words, and you already gave a great tip about inviting, saying, I'm inviting you. This is not a forced close your eyes session. This is not a forced. I really, really am going to take that in my toolbox. So thank you for that. What are the cues do you find to be highly important and that we should be aware of as we are guiding a session? So other than inviting, what else would you say? Like, I would suggest bringing this to the table.
You mean on the trauma sensitive side of things, or just in general?
Both. Thank you for mentioning that, because the trauma sensitive side really, really, like, you drew me in. I think I touched the green light at one point, because that really was something I'm concerned about. But also in general, because invite is also general, but invite is also for the people who don't want to be forced because of a trauma. But yeah, both, if you can touch on both. I invite you.
So one thing that is really important to me when I teach whatever, like either Wim Hof or yoga, I try to pick a location that's accessible for people. And with every step of the way that I do, I want it to be accessible too. Like, I have this weird blow up ice bath thing that's really annoying me, because I feel like it's not accessible to everyone, and not everyone can get into this little ice bath because they can't bend their knees or they are a bit too big. And so accessibility, I think, is one thing that I love to mention. And that also goes for the Wim Hof breathing sessions. Like, we usually tell people to lie down, right? But there are people that can't lie down, or there are people who can't lie down with their legs straight. And I think it's really important to check in with people when they lie down, if they're okay where they are, to make sure that they feel comfortable, because it's not comfortable if you have to sit through a 30-minute breathwork session if your lower back is hurting. And it's actually pretty easy to support that person by getting a pillow for under their knees, or like making sure they have what they need to feel comfortable. I think that's really good. And I also like to invite people to wiggle or to get comfortable. Like before we lie down, I usually say, and if you have some wiggles to get out, or if you have some movements that you need to do, or if you need to get comfortable, then take your time to get comfortable. Because if you're not comfortable, this is going to be bad. Like the next 30 minutes, you're not going to enjoy. And even within the 30 minutes, if you need to move, if you need to change your position, inviting people to feel free to listen to their bodies more than to listen to me, I think is really important. Because we are so taught in our school systems that you need to sit at your desk and you're not allowed to move. And if you need to pee, you need to hold it until the next break. And yes, but no, this is not what I want to embody in my yoga room, in my Wim Hof workshops. I'd like people to listen to their bodies because it's important.
Thank you so much. That is so basically being aware of, because if you have a room of 10, you have to, you're basically hosting for 10 people to be comfortable for that 30 minute breath session, which is where I think for most of us can agree that's the meat and the bones of our, of what we're preparing, because we're preparing a meal, right, as a host. So vegan meat, because you know, vegan. But point is that being aware that everyone has their allergies and their preferences, and making sure, like, hey, I don't want to make that the main course uncomfortable. Thank you so much for sharing that, because I do suggest laying down because I like it, but this is your meal. How do you want your meal? You know, it's, you know, the golden rule, treat people the way you want to be treated. I think we should go a level above that from your advice. And like you said, treat people the way they want to be treated and guide them the way they want to be guided. My next question, unless someone else has another question, how do you cater to the actual the group when in trying to give them what they need when there's 10 different flavors, preferences, better yet? And how do we make it where someone doesn't want to visualize, let's say I try to bring people back to their a part of their childhood that they really enjoyed about themselves. I really like that part of my ending for some groups, but I don't know, maybe someone's like, I didn't like my childhood, man. How do you make it not too general and not too specific without making it, yeah, to make it somewhat special at the same time? Does that make sense?
I think in a trauma sensitive space, you need to be aware that you can never avoid all triggers. Like, you don't know what triggers people. And if you asking them for a childhood memory, that, yeah, totally, that can trigger someone, but you never know. It could also trigger them that you ask them about their favorite food, or I don't know, like anything can trigger someone. So you can't never avoid everything. But if you set the space in a way that you give people permission, and I like the word, thank you, Chris, for reminding me of the word permission. If you give people permission to not do a thing if it's not right for them, and if you set the room right in the beginning, then they might also be able to embody that at the end of your practice. Like if it's something that you mention several times throughout the day, and they know that they don't have to do anything and everything is an invitation, and they can listen to their own body first and they only listen to you in the second place, if you keep telling them these things, they will know that they don't have to go there if they don't want to go there.
Thank you. And thank you, Chris, for throwing that word in there, because that's something else that we should definitely be aware of. Thank you for also saying that, because people who are, I would consider myself highly sensitive, I don't know, I don't want to do something wrong. I want to make sure this is a pleasant experience. But you allowed me to at least say, hey, I'm trying my best to avoid all the triggers, but I can't avoid it all. It's like, it's almost like trying to live in a bubble, never going outside because I'm going to catch something, you know, that people are talking about in the news for like a long time, you know. I don't know what they call it anymore on TV, but you know that virus. But I want to at least try to live life, you know, and the same idea when it comes to these guided meditations. I want to still live life and maybe guide people down the road without messing up, but how can I avoid it all? So thank you for allowing me to like accept that, hey, I'm trying. And I think that's a great message for everyone out there. Like, you try your best, but you can't control everything. You can't control the wind. You can't control temperature. You can't control who's going to be coughing in front of you, but you can at least try your best to guide. So thank you so much for that. regarding meditation and cues and any questions out there, Sharon, LST, Louis, Louis Rock, Patrick, Odin, Nick, Severin, sorry if I said it wrong, Walter. If you guys have any other questions, we have room for one more question. And I think Chris raised his hand first.
Chris or Christian?
Please.
Me?
Christian. Yeah.
Ah, okay. Francesco said you're a yoga therapist in training. Could you tell us a little bit more about it? I'm actually also a yoga teacher, and I listened to one call of Yoga Alliance about yoga therapy, but they didn't talk about yoga therapy in the call. They were just talking about regulations, blah, blah, blah. So I have still no clue what is yoga therapy, and is it more directed on the physical layer? I mean, the body, or does it also include the other layers of yoga, like breathing, meditation? Just tell us a little bit about it. It would be nice.
Sure. So I'm taking my yoga therapy training in Canada with a Canadian yoga therapy school. It's called the School of Embodied Yoga Therapy. And they're part of IAYT. It's the International Association of Yoga Therapy. And that's like Yoga Alliance, but for yoga therapists. And in Canada and in the States, as far as I'm informed, yoga therapy is already much more part of the health system than it is here in Europe. I'm guessing you're a German, Christian. So I think it's not that present here. And I know that here in Austria, we don't have any yoga therapy trainings that are really extensive. Like, I know people do 300-hour yoga therapy trainings. Mine is 900 hours. So it was a two-year program, and it's almost like a master's equivalent, like a master's studies. And I know that in the States there are actually master's degrees in yoga therapy. And so the aim of yoga therapy is that it's not substituting any of the traditional things. It's not instead of physical therapy. It's not instead of psychotherapy. It's something that's extra that you can do on top of things. So my main teacher, for example, she works at a cancer center. And she does a lot of chronic pain management with patients, where you use mindfulness techniques or movement techniques to deal with chronic pain. Or she also does a lot of accompanying people who are dying and helping them with their movement, with their pain, with kind of making their mind up around death. And it's a lot. It's not just physical. And in my training, we've done a lot of things about physical stuff, of course, but we've also worked with trauma, with grief, with death. So it's very multi-layered. And I know in Canada, for example, there are some government-funded or government-paid jobs actually for yoga therapists. So they go to hospitals, they work in hospitals, they work in rehabilitation centers. Here in Austria, that's not a thing yet. I'm not sure how or if I can work in that field. I'm not even allowed to call myself a therapist here because it's a protected term. So, if you want to chat about it, maybe reach out, and we can talk about it more, Christian, because I feel like it's very big. There's a lot to talk about. I've learned a lot through yoga therapy school, but I'm not 100% sure how I'm going to use it yet, or how it's going to play out in an actual therapist setting here in Austria.
Yeah, thanks. It was worth more than 1 hour of Yoga Alliance call, what you just said, in a few minutes.
Oh, thank you.
Cool. Thank you guys. But thank you for sharing that, Teresa, because I think that was one of when we started this, I wanted that to be touched on. So thank you so much. You were going to mention something to close off?
One quick thing. Yeah, the IAYT. I'll write it in the chat. That's the International Alliance of Yoga Therapy. And if you look that up, you can find IAYT. You can find a lot of information about yoga therapy and how it's practiced.
Great. Guys, we have come to an end of our Wim Hof Wednesday, our 18th consecutive episode. And I'm so honored that we have the instructors to be here. I mean, guys, you're going to have an amazing time. I'm jealous just thinking about you guys going to Poland and having fun. But Wim Hof Wednesdays has been a great opportunity to collaborate, unite, and to share our superpowers, because we all are special, and not just our moms and dads think that, but really we are. And to share that with our community is so important, because you may have a skill that someone else wants or to know more about. So Teresa, again, a huge round of applause. Everyone, please take your time to clap for her, because she prepared the slides, she prepared her energy, and she came on short notice. And I will never forget this. And I think everyone watching this will never forget this, because meditation is a big chunk of our of what we're promoting, whether it's breath work after the breath work or during the ice, or to just find peace before you do a challenge. So it's a huge part of what we're promoting out there to the world. So thank you for that. If you're ever interested in joining Wim Hof Wednesdays as a participant or as a speaker, please, please contact me. And also remember that we're here to collaborate and to make our community stronger, because we're not competing with each other, guys. There's no blue water, red water here. There's a lot of water and there's a lot of love. So we're going to keep on spreading that. Next week, we will have Brittany, who has been an instructor since September. I'm not sure if anyone knows her. Brittany, amazing, amazing soul. And she gave me some great words of advice on her business experience. She's owned many businesses before. And she's, I was worried about marketing. How do I market? Do I go on Facebook? Do I go on Instagram? Do I become an influencer? And she says, word of mouth is going to be where it's at. So you can try to be as much as you can be online and Instagram, but she really calmed my soul down. And it's true. The word of mouth has been my abundant source of repeat. I won't even call them customers, but people who want to be a part of this community and participate in these events, whether on my online breathing classes or on my live events. So if you want to join next week's, please join, because Brittany has a prepared session, and we're going to do over Q&As as well about word of mouth and how your mouth and your voice is different than Wim Hof's and that you should use it. So it's going to be a combination of both. So word of mouth and your mouth. Thank you all for being here. Please keep on coming back. And Teresa, and if I could hug you, I would. And I really appreciate your human. Yeah, there we go. That's how we do it, Nick. Your human mentality about meditation is not this, but this. And you know what? Don't beat yourself up if you're not in that zone that everyone says that's where you have to hit. Really, really wonderful way to put it. That being said, you amazing souls came here, gave us your time and your heart and your effort. And I hope to see you next week. Same time, same place, same link.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody. Good to see you all.
Thank you, Francesco. Thank you, Teresa. Bye.
Bye. Ciao.